So next up, we have Natalie Paquette from University of Washington, talking about a holomorphic theory on Twister space, having fun with a holomorphic theory on Twister space.
I admit I forgot what title I originally gave you. Yeah, so thanks so much, Tudor, for the introduction, and thanks for the invitation to speak today. So I want to talk about some work in collaboration with Kevin, and I'll mostly focus on two papers that have already appeared, so I'll just give the archive numbers. And as the title suggests, the focus is going to be a particular holomorphic theory on Twister space, which is a six-real dimensional manifold. And we're going to talk about some kind of fun physics applications of the existence of this theory and its various ramifications. So an alternative title for this talk could have been something like gauge theory amplitudes from 2D chiral correlators. And that's going to be kind of the punchline of the talk. Right, so today I want to focus on, as I said, a certain local holomorphic theory in six dimensions. And from this theory, we're going to ultimately reproduce certain tree and one loop amplitudes in QCD. Some particularly simple and well understood amplitudes, but we're going to recover them from a novel perspective, and in particular find a different way to express these amplitudes than what had previously been appreciated before. And so I apologize to the mathematicians in the audience, but this is very much a physics talk, although I definitely think there are all sorts of interesting mathematical applications, and I can at least gesture towards them, if not make them completely precise during this talk. So the main result of the talk, which I'll start out with, and then I'll get into the details, is that there's an isomorphism between correlation functions of a certain 2D chiral algebra which I'll introduce later. And these turn out to be in correspondence. These are in bijective correspondence with what are called form factors in, again, a certain four-dimensional theory, which I'll introduce. And these form factors can reproduce some QCD scattering amplitudes, more precisely integrands of these scattering amplitudes in general. And even more precisely, particular scattering amplitudes just of massless gluons. And again, I'll reproduce some tree and one loop level results. And form factors, I'll remind you, are just scattering in the presence of the insertion of a local operator. So as I'll mention, this 4D theory is actually a CFT. So it doesn't have non-trivial scattering amplitudes just in and of itself. But if you insert a local operator into your 4D theory, you'll be able to get some non-trivial scattering, and this kind of quantity is called a form factor. So for a particular 4D theory, these form factors are in bijective correspondence with correlation functions of a two-dimensional chiral algebra, and I'll sketch that isomorphism. And both the 2D chiral algebra and the particular 4D theory that I'm studying have their origins in a single six-dimensional local holomorphic theory on Twister space. So I'll explain how these kind of 4D and the 4D and 2D physics that turn out to be isomorphic to one another actually both enjoy a lift to six dimensions from a particular holomorphic parent theory. So before I get to the full 6D theory, let me start with kind of a key sector of the four-dimensional theory. So in four dimensions, an important piece of the theory that I'm going to get is the self-dual sector of Yang-Mills theory. So it has an action, it has a BF of action, where B is an anti-self-dual two-form on R4 And I have some choice of Lie algebra G that labels my gauge group, which I'll leave arbitrary for now. And the minus sign on F also indicates that I'm restricting to the anti-self-dual part of the field strength. And you may remember that one can recover, at least perturbatively, the complete Yang-Mills theory by adding a certain deformation term to the Lagrangian. It's proportional to trace B squared. So if I integrate out B, I recover the action for ordinary Yang-Mills theory with a certain theta angle. But I'm not actually going to explicitly add this deformation to the action and recover full Yang-Mills theory, although you can see that this might be related to how I can recover some QCD amplitudes. Rather, I'm going to be computing form factors in an enlargement of the self-dual Yang-Mills theory. So I'll be computing amplitudes in self-dual Yang-Mills theory that are enriched by the presence of operator insertions. And some of the most interesting operator insertions that I can put in my self-dual Yang-Mills theory are precisely going to be operators of the form trace B squared. And in general, I can insert kind of n of them at various points in my four-dimensional spacetime. And if I integrated over the positions of these operators, I would just be recovering amplitudes in full Yang-Mills, but it's actually more natural from the twister point of view to just leave them kind of in an unintegrated form where I don't integrate over the positions of these operator insertions. But nonetheless, some of the most interesting form factors in the self-dual Yang-Mills theory are going to be those that arise from scattering in the presence of trace B squared. And in general, I can insert an arbitrary number of these to compute my unintegrated form factors. So quite generally, if we just look at the combinatorics of the amplitudes that I can get in QCD from self-dual Yang-Mills form factors, you know, at L loops and with N insertions of this trace B squared, I'll get a kind of unintegrated QCD amplitude with N minus L plus one negative helicity gluons. And in general, I can have an arbitrary number of positive helicity gluons. That just comes from playing around with the combinatorics of these things. But the 4D theory that I'm actually going to study isn't just self-dual Yang-Mills theory on its own. It's going to be a particular enlargement of self-dual Yang-Mills theory. So I'm going to couple in another sector, and this will be natural from the point of view of twister space. And then we'll see that this actually dramatically simplifies the final answers for these things. So let me go now to six dimensions, and then we'll return to four dimensions and also two dimensions to build up this correspondence. So twister space as a real manifold is equivalent to R4 cross CP1. So for every point in say a Euclidean four-dimensional theory, I have an associated copy of CP1. I have some line in twister space, which is parameterizing complex structures. And more precisely, not just as a real manifold, I can write twister space as this vibration of O1 plus O1 over CP1. And throughout the talk, I'll write my coordinates on the fibers of twister space as V1 and V2. So these are linear functions on the fibers, and they both have first order poles as the coordinate, the holomorphic coordinate z on my CP1 goes to infinity. So I'll use z, v1, and v2 for the local coordinates. So as I said, to each point in four dimensions, I have an associated line in twister space. And one of the beautiful things about the geometry of twister space is that in general, two complex lines in twister space will intersect if and only if the corresponding points in R4 are null separated. So, or the corresponding points in four dimensions are null separated. So more properly, twister space is really associated with a complexified four-dimensional space-time. And we can speak about null separation on an analytically continued light cone between two points. And the nice thing about twister space is that it's kind of agnostic about the signature of the four-dimensional theory, because it really works most naturally with complexified four-dimensional space-time. So at the end of the day, I can restrict to various real slices in four dimensions, which will give me four-dimensional Lorentzian space-time or Euclidean or even 2, 2 signature, but twister space kind of nicely packages these things together. And it's more convenient to think about analytically continued four dimensions and momenta and so forth. And that's what I'll do in this talk. I actually won't restrict to a particular real slice or signature in four dimensions. But the simple fact about the intersection of lines in twister space, if and only if you have null separation of the corresponding points in four dimensions, gives you kind of very powerful analyticity constraints on the resulting correlation functions that you might want to compute in the 6D theory, because operators have only very limited ways in which they can intersect, in particular when two lines in twister space touch. So the geometry is very powerful for understanding the analytical structure of correlation functions if you have a physical theory on twister space. So as I said, Z is my CP1 coordinate. And I'll also occasionally use Z bar as this projectivized fiber coordinate, which is kind of in accordance with the physics literature. If I restrict to Lorentzian space, where Z bar is really the conjugate of Z, then this is the natural correspondence. Now, physics on twister space has been studied for quite a long time, and there's a very well-developed dictionary for how four-dimensional physics can arise from local physics or even some non-local physics on twister space. Let me just mention kind of the basic and most important element of the dictionary between theories on twister space and corresponding theories on four dimensions. And this goes back to work of Penrose, Ward, and many, many others. So let me just write this out. So in general, it's very easy for me to build on-shell states of the gauge theory in four dimensions, or states that satisfy the, in general, nonlinear equations of motion, by just building certain Delboeck cohomology classes on twister space. And the spin of the resulting particle in four dimensions, or the helicity, which I'm labeling by H, comes from this line bundle here, in which my cohomology classes are taking values. So in particular, these cohomology classes are valued in terms of a homogeneous function with a specified weight or scaling dimension on twister space. And in particular, they'll vanish to order 2 minus 2h as the coordinate z goes to infinity on twister space. So I just can very easily build solutions to the equations of motion in four dimensions by just writing down simple cohomology classes on twister space that have a specified scaling behavior and the coordinates on CP1. If I integrate over the CP1, I'll get some field configuration in four dimensions, and kind of the beauty and magic of twister space is that I land on solutions to the field equations, which in general can be nonlinear. And so, but on the other hand, it's much easier to write explicit cohomology class representatives in six dimensions. So this is kind of, a really efficient and simple way to package these solutions in a geometric fashion. Because again, it's quite easy to build these cohomology classes and then integrate over the CP1 of twister space to land on some massless field configuration in four dimensions. And so in particular, as has also been known for a very long time since the work of Penrose and Ward and others, there's a holomorphic version of BF theory in six dimensions. And I'll try to denote them by different letters, curly B and curly F, to separate them from the four dimensional fields. So there's a six dimensional BF theory where now A is a 0-1 form on twister space, valued in the Lie algebra, and curly B is a 3-1 form. And each of them enjoy their own gauge transformations on twister space. And this BF theory, you can show without too much difficulty when you reduce over CP1, will bring you down to the self-dual sector of Yang-Mills theory in four dimensions by means of this construction. And so classically, again, this has been known for a long time by work of Penrose and Ward. And classically, you can do this for any choice of gauge group G that you like. And it's going to be kind of the starting point for the story that I want to tell you about. However, even though classically this works perfectly well, I can just construct my cohomology classes, integrate over CP1, and I recover my self-dual theory in four dimensions, quantum mechanically this correspondence is actually false. And it's false simply because the six-dimensional theory is actually not a well-defined quantum theory on its own at all. Rather, it suffers from a one-loop gauge anomaly. And because ultimately what we'll want to do is again leverage the powerful analyticity properties that come from twister space to obtain results for four-dimensional amplitudes, we want our six-dimensional theory to be well-defined at the loop level so that the correspondence between form factors and ultimately chiral correlation functions can hold. So we'd really like to have a way to repair the one loop gauge anomaly that the six-dimensional theory suffers from, so that we can so that this uplift will persist. And happily, there is a way to do this, and that's due to Kevin in some recent work from this archive paper. You can cancel the one loop gauge anomaly of the six-dimensional theory, the gauge anomaly in 6D. And it works by a Green-Schwarz type mechanism, where the anomalous diagram in six dimensions can actually be canceled by a tree level diagram where one is exchanging a particular scalar field. Without going into details, let me just tell you some of the key elements. So I can cancel this gauge anomaly now for specific choices of the Lie algebra. So for the rest of the talk, I'm going to restrict to the choices of Lie algebra for which the anomaly can indeed be canceled. And that happens for these guys, SU2, SU3, SO8, and the exceptional Lie algebras. You could also cancel the anomaly if you have theories with matter on twister space, but I'm just not gonna, with extra matter on twister space, but I'm not going to go there today. So in six dimensions, in particular, you need to add a field called eta, which can be written as a 2-1 form on twister space, actually satisfying a certain constraint equation. The details are not important, but basically this field satisfies, has an action which is related to the action of what's called BCOV or Kadira-Spencer theory, for those of you that like topological string theory. If you don't, that's not important. The important thing that I wanna stress is that it couples to curly A, a Chern-Simons-like term curly A in the following way, where the coefficient of that action is fixed by some representation theory data of the Lie algebra, tuned in such a way that these two diagrams cancel each other. And that gets rid of the gauge anomaly. So now there's some extra field eta in the game. And in four dimensions, when I integrate again over CP1, now I'll have not only the BF theory that I had from my holomorphic BF theory in the first place, but I'll also pick up an additional scalar field to which it couples. And this scalar field I'll call rho in four dimensions. So it comes from eta in six dimensions, but I'm just gonna call it rho in four dimensions. It's a real scalar field, and it couples to an F wedge F term in four dimensions, and it also has kind of a funny quartic kinetic term, which I can talk more about if there's interest, but you can also just take it as given from this twister space construction that this is what comes out, and this is the right thing. So the four-dimensional theory that I'm actually going to study is not just self-dual Yang-Mills theory on its own, but rather self-dual Yang-Mills theory plus this funny axion-like field. And again, with this coupling, the six-dimensional theory becomes well-defined at the quantum level, because tree-level exchange of this axion cancels off the one-loop anomalous gauge amplitude that comes from this box diagram. And as a result, I now have a well-defined conformal theory, actually in four dimensions. So this 4D theory with self-dual Yang-Mills plus an axion is a certain non-unitary CFT at the quantum level. And this is kind of natural, again, from the point of view of six dimensions, because twister space, when I build these on-shell gauge theory states, The on-shell states that Twister space gives us are most naturally from masks fields. So this is really an exercise in conformal physics. Everything is massless. There's no natural scale in the problem. So if I have something that's encoding this conformal data in six dimensions, I land on a conformal theory in four dimensions. And again, this persists at the quantum level precisely because I've engineered a theory that cancels the anomaly and lets me do this. So great. So now I have this local four-dimensional theory that's self-Julien nulls plus this axion. It's scale invariant quantum mechanically as well. It has a local uplift to Twister space. And importantly, I'm going to be able to associate a two-dimensional chiral algebra to it from the six-dimensional theory as well. So the theorem that we proved is that these form factors in the four-dimensional theory coming from self-Julien nulls plus the axion are in bijective correspondence with with correlators of a certain two-dimensional chiral algebra. And that's what I'm gonna talk about for the rest of the talk. And as I said, for particular choices of operator insertions in 4D, i.e. for particular form factors, I'll also be able to reproduce QCD amplitudes coming from the fact that self-Julien nulls theory is part and parcel of my 4D theory, and therefore some QCD amplitudes can be rewritten in terms of two-dimensional chiral correlators. And again, this all comes from the 6D construction. Okay, so the chiral algebra, which computes form factors in this kind of funny 4D theory, also turns out to be an enlargement of one studied recently in the physics community in terms of a program called celestial holography, which is a certain algebra of what are called conformally soft gluons. So that's a remark for the physicists, which I can talk about in more detail if there's interest, but for the moment, let me just display the chiral algebra that we have. And then I'll talk about how it relates to the 4D theory. Good. So the chiral algebra has some generators. And let me write the spin or weight under the conformal group. It has some other quantum numbers because there's also Fleber symmetries in the game, but just in the interest of time, let me not go there. So there's four towers of generators, each of which is labeled by a pair of positive integers. Physically, they have origins in six dimensions. So J is related to curly A, J tilde to curly B, and E and F are both related to eta, this axion field. Physically, J corresponds to positive helicity gluons in 4D, J tilde to negative helicity gluons in 4D, and then E and F are some matter fields coming from this axion. And so they have some spin or conformal weight. And we see that for positive integers m and n, their conformal weights are mostly negative. So indeed, we're really dealing with some kind of funny non-unitary construction here. The generators have negative conformal weight. And so I'll remind you that these are the quantum numbers under the natural action of SL2R, which acts on the holomorphic coordinate Z. So it's rotating precisely the plane or the complex line where the chiral algebra is going to live. So again, here's my CP1 on Twister space with coordinate Z. The 2D chiral algebra is going to be supported here. And I haven't told you how I've derived it yet or where it comes from, but for the moment, I'm just going to give you the chiral algebra and then I'll tell you where it comes from. But for the moment, I just want to point out that it is supported in two dimensions, and those two dimensions are the base of the Twister fibers, which in four dimensions corresponds, if you like, to the celestial sphere at null infinity for the physicists. Okay, so they have some OPEs. Let me not write down all of them, but let me kind of write down just some of the ones for J and J tilde. Just so you can see that at tree level, the resulting OPEs are a Katz-Moody algebra at level zero associated to holomorphic maps from CQ into G. And so I apologize, I didn't give myself, I'm kind of squeezing these OPEs in here, but I just want to illustrate that fairly simple. So again, it's just a level zero Katz-Moody algebra for that particular algebra of maps. The J tildes have non-singular OPE with themselves. And I also have additional terms coming from these E and F towers that I'm just not going to write down, but let me just write down the Katz-Moody part because it's simple. And physicists, again, might recognize this as a so-called celestial OPE for conformally soft positive and negative Felicity gluons. If that remark means something to you, that's great. But if not, it's not so important. And this arises very naturally from twister space. If I want to consider the mode algebra, which it's also natural to do, I can construct an infinite dimensional Lie algebra from the algebra of modes. Of these chiral algebra generators. Of course, mode algebra is determined by the OPE and vice versa, but this is some huge Lie algebra, and it actually is precisely the algebra of local gauge transformations on twister space that preserve the vacuum field configuration. And this is how classically in the twister correspondence one kind of builds states in the first place. And again, I'm happy to say more about that. That's not at the level of cryptic remarks, but I'm also worried about the battery life of my Apple Pencil, so I'm going to be kind of slightly telegraphic through some of these things. Okay, so I have some 2D chiral algebra, and I claim that correlation functions of this beast reproduce form factors in four dimensions. And the mode algebra kind of very naturally comes about from algebras of gauge symmetries on twister space, as I just remarked, although it's not that hard to prove, I'm just not going to prove it. But really kind of physically, how should I think of the vacuum module for this chiral algebra and its relationship with four-dimensional physics? That so far I have left mysterious. The correspondence is as follows. Generators of this chiral algebra, those towers of J, J tildes, E and F that I wrote down, are naturally isomorphic to a basis of conformal primary states in four dimensions in my 4D theory. And these 4D states also have negative weight. And again, these are on-shell gauge theory states. They're massless, and the way to think about it.
I just wanted to ask if I can understand the two integers that label your J's and E's as sort of coming from just the two sort of fiber directions in twister space.
Yeah, they're related to data about kind of angular momentum in 4D, which is kind of encoded in the fiber directions in twister space.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I didn't write down all the quantum numbers, but there's also kind of a flavor SU2 symmetry rotating the fibers. Under which all of these towers have quantum their eigenstates with respect to those rotations as well. Did that answer your question? Sorry, my AirPods are kind of quiet.
Yes, thanks. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So twister space is kind of morally like a space of null linear momenta, which is the celestial sphere, and the CP1 geometrizes that. And then the fiber directions are kind of roughly speaking geometrizing the angular momentum data of massless states in 4D. Mm-hmm. So if you kind of trace through that correspondence,
mm-hmm. Thank you.
That's what you get. Mm-hmm. Yeah, any other questions? Sorry, you might have to yell a little bit just to get my attention because, like I said, my AirPods are kind of quiet. Good. So, okay. Yeah, so how do we actually think of these chiral algebra generators? Well, as I said, or my central claim, so let me just write this down. So my central claim is that twister space naturally geometrizes on-shell gauge theory states in four dimensions. And I further claim that they naturally give us gauge theory states in a what's called a conformal primary basis. So physically in four dimensions, I'm landing on things that are not eigenstates under the usual momentum generators in four dimensions, which is how we kind of normally label our scattering states in physics. Our asymptotic states are typically in a momentum eigenbasis. Rather, I'm building these primary states as eigenstates under the generator of boosts in four dimensions instead. Turns out this is kind of naturally what we get in Twister space, but in particular, I have eigenstates, or I have on-shell gauge theory states that are naturally conformal primaries with particular conformal weights. And these are in one-to-one correspondence with generators of my chiral algebra in 2D. And in fact, from the sixth theory, the 6D lift to Twister theory as well. These are again conformal primary states on Twister space with a negative conformal weight. So here's 6D, here's 4D, here's 2D. This piece is just Penrose Ward. Everything what I've already talked about, you know, you build your Dobell cohomology classes and you integrate them over a CP1. And in particular, you can build these cohomology classes for example, curly A, my six dimensional field. I can build such a gauge field configuration as localized, say, at a point z equals z naught on CP1, and allow for an arbitrary polynomial in the fiber directions v1 and v2. This is a good cohomology class. You can verify by looking at the action of the Virasoro algebra in terms of holomorphic vector fields on Twister space. You can verify that it is in fact a conformal primary state of the specified conformal weight. I can integrate it over a CP1 and again land on precisely the claimed gauge field configurations in four dimensions. And these again are precisely to be identified with conformal primary generators in 2D. So kind of the picture is I have my CP1 with holomorphic coordinate Z. I have these 6D field configurations that are delta function supported at points on my CP1. And kind of have arbitrary polynomial dependence in the fibers. And the conformal primary generators that are living here on my CP1 are, if you like, kind of the sources for these special gauge theory states. Yes. That was a little bit quick, so I apologize for that. More properly, the mathematical way to say this is that these are a Kozul dual vertex algebra on CP1 for the holomorphic 6D theory on Twister space. So they're encoding a universal, if you like, gauge algebra for the six dimensional theory. And there's a principled way to compute the OPEs from that point of view. And we do that in the paper, but in the interest of time, I won't go into it unless there's questions. Okay, so to summarize, the J's, J tildes, E and F's are the universal or Kozul dual chiral algebra that we get by coupling my 6D holomorphic theory to a two-dimensional defect or holomorphic defect or chiral algebra along a CP1 in Twister space. And I get a state in the vacuum module of this algebra by just studying the chiral algebra in the presence of an on-shell background field in my 6D gauge theory, which is localized at a point on the base of the Twister vibration. And these on-shell background fields, again, are precisely single particle conformal primary states in four dimensions. And that goes by way of the usual Penrose Ward correspondence.
Natalie, okay. I didn't quite catch the Kozul duality statement. Could you say it again? I'm sorry.
Yeah, so this chiral algebra, okay, so of course the caveat is that Kozul duality for vertex algebras isn't fully defined. I'm kind of imagining that it's working the same way as Kozul duality for associative algebras in a physical context. But this is the universal holomorphic defect algebra for my 6D holomorphic theory along the base of the Twister vibration.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions?
I have a question.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. More generally for John Simon's theories of this type, I would imagine that Kozul duality holds more generally for, say, any local operator in the 6D holomorphic John Simon's theory and and the local operators on the surface operator wrapping CP1. So is there some restriction such that you have local operators that are only relevant for the 4D theory?
No, so this has nothing, if I'm understanding your question right, so the Kazul dual algebra is indeed kind of a universal vertex algebra associated to the 6D theory. However, this local six-dimensional theory also gives a local four-dimensional theory because of kind of this, precisely because we've canceled the gauge anomaly so that this correspondence still works. So there's no sense in which there's a subset of operators kind of privileged to the 4D theory. You know, it's the Kazul dual algebra for 6D, but things in 6D are in bijective correspondence already with things in 4D. So there's no restriction involved when I look at the Kazul dual vertex algebra. Does that answer your question? Or maybe did you have a different question?
No, that's it.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's the question? Okay. Yeah, it's not like a normal KK reduction where I'm like throwing out a bunch of massive modes. Here, I have a local theory in 6D. I can just reduce on the CP1 and obtain a local theory in four dimensions. You know, roughly, I have a holomorphic theory. I can just shrink down the CP1 and land on a local four-dimensional theory with no loss of information, with no throwing out of any physical degrees of freedom. And this works at the quantum level because I've canceled the gauge anomaly. In particular, that means I can also compute a quantum deformation of this chiral algebra, which is not something that I would be able to do in a gauge anomalous six-dimensional theory. Okay, yeah, any other questions? Okay, so what I've said so far is that generators of my 2D chiral algebra correspond to conformal primary states in 6D and by Penrose Ward in 4D as well. So I have a correspondence there, but I haven't totally determined how to define correlation functions in this two-dimensional theory yet. In particular, it's highly non-unitary and it admits a large number of conformal blocks in the sense of Balanchine and Drinfeld, meaning a way to define the correlation function that's compatible with the OPE and some other basic axioms. So there's another kind of piece of the 4D2D dictionary, which associates to any local operator insertion in four dimensions, in my four-dimensional theory, it'll associate a conformal block in two dimensions, which I'll denote like this, just labeled by that same 4D operator. So correlation functions in the 2D theory are defined with a choice of conformal block. And then I can also insert an arbitrary number of vertex operators in my chiral algebra. For example, the generators J and J tilde will be particularly interesting to me. Okay, so I can mention kind of why these things are in correspondence with each other in a moment, but I just want to emphasize that from the geometry of twister space, these correlation functions are very nicely behaved. Once I can define them, they're going to be some rational function of the insertion points on the twister sphere, on the CP1. They're going to have poles at coincident points of the vertex operators, which are determined by the OPE, whose tree-level algebra I partly wrote down for you. And there can also be further poles or zeros at the coordinate z goes to infinity, and those turn out to be determined by the spin or conformal weight of the vertex operator insertions. So I have very good analytical control over the behavior of this correlation function. Okay. Now again, I haven't yet told you why this part of the correspondence holds, but let me just mention that if you once kind of this part of the theorem is established, it follows that correlation functions in 2D are in correspondence with form factors in 4D, because remember, form factors, these are scattering amplitudes in the presence of an operator insertion. So for scattering amplitudes, we have to define a bunch of asymptotic states, the in and out states. And those are in bijective correspondence with generators of the chiral algebra that I'm inserting in my correlation function. So those give me kind of the states. And then if the operators are associated with conformal blocks, then defining the correlation function as a bunch of states and a choice of conformal block in 4D will translate to, you know, a scattering amplitude in the presence of a local operator insertion. Okay. So like I said, I still haven't told you about this part of the story, and I will mention a little bit about it shortly. Any questions about that for the moment? I'm just going to summarize in a little table before I kind of move on. And you can yell questions if there are any. So conformal primary generators are going to be kind of single particle states. And OPEs in this chiral algebra correspond in four dimensions to what are called collinear limits in the scattering literature. And conformal blocks are associated to local operators. And putting all of these things together, that gives correlation functions associated to form factors. So that's just like the table of basic dictionary elements. Between 2D and 4D in this context. Okay. So what I haven't told you about is why conformal blocks in 2D are associated to local operators in 4D. And the basic idea also is a result of the twistorial origins of this whole story. So let me think about twister space. Let me think about an open subset of twister space for a moment. And in particular, let me think of the subset of twister space, which is the complement of the CP1 at the origin. So I'm going to call that PT prime. It's isomorphic to S3 cross CP1 cross half line. So I'm removing the CP1 at the origin. So precisely in four dimensions, I'm engineering that I land on R4 with the origin removed, or in other words, the half line cross S3. And again, that comes from just reduction along the CP1. So here I'm in 6D, here I'm in 4D, and I'm just removing the origin. So in 4D, I'm going to be inserting a local operator at the origin that corresponds to removing a whole complex line in twister space. And the result is that I'm studying the 6D holomorphic theory on this configuration here. But there's another way I can dimensionally reduce the 6D theory on this geometry. On this arrow, I reduced on the CP1, but I could also naturally reduce on this S3 instead. And the result is that I will get some kind of 3D theory on CP1 cross the half line. And I know my 6D theory, so I can just do a full KK, I can do a KK reduction on the S3, and I will get a particular three-dimensional theory. And the boundary of this three-dimensional theory is going to be precisely my chiral algebra supported on CP1. So here's my chiral algebra, I'll call it curly C, it lives on that CP1. And this three-dimensional theory is a partially holomorphic theory. So there's a 3D theory that lives down here, for which my chiral algebra furnishes a two-dimensional holomorphic boundary condition on the CP1. So the 3D theory is topological along the half line and holomorphic along the CP1. It comes from a twist of the 3D n equals 2 theory, it turns out. And the chiral algebra is best thought of as the boundary, as the 2D boundary chiral algebra for this 3D holomorphic topological theory. Okay. And now how can I get kind of conformal blocks associated to local operators from this point of view? Well, as I said, okay, so the chiral algebra, my chiral algebra C, is the boundary algebra of the 3D theory that lives on R cross CP1. And now I want to define a natural way to define a conformal block for my chiral algebra is the Hilbert space of the three-dimensional theory at r equals zero. So let me label my half line by a coordinate r. It goes from zero to infinity. At r equals zero, I want to define the Hilbert space of the three-dimensional theory. So I'll write it as HCP1. So I can naturally define a conformal block in that way, completely analogous to how I define conformal blocks, say, in the WZW model, viewed as the boundary chiral algebra for a three-dimensional Chern-Simons theory. Here it's very similar, except the three-dimensional theory is not a topological theory. Rather, it's a holomorphic topological theory. And that's kind of the origin of all the funny non-unitary properties of the two-dimensional chiral algebra. In particular, the fact that it has tons of conformal blocks, it doesn't have a stress tensor, so my Katz-Moody algebra correspondingly is at level zero. All of kind of the qualitative differences between the Chern-Simons WZW story and this one is precisely because from bidimensional reduction of the 6D holomorphic theory on twister space, my resulting three-dimensional theory is not topological. Rather, it's partially topological, but holomorphic in the CP1 directions. And the chiral algebras can be naturally defined by a boundary condition, you know, at the other end of the half line, at r equals infinity. So a correlation function should really naturally be thought of, you know, as a correlation function for some collection of local operators at various points on the sphere at r equals infinity, can naturally be thought of as a correlator in the bulk boundary system on the half line cross CP1, where we have some state at r equals zero corresponding to a choice of conformal block, and the boundary condition defining the chiral algebra at infinity with a bunch of operator insertions. And I'm just pairing them together. So again, this is completely analogous to kind of the Chern-Simons WZW story that might be more familiar to many of you. In any case, doing this KK reduction in two different ways from twister space then allows us to establish the isomorphism. So if I start with, you know, a Hilbert space of my six-dimensional theory on S3 cross CP1, I can dimensionally reduce it in two different ways. I can do it along CP1 and get the Hilbert space of the 4D theory on S3. The 4D theory is a CFT, so if I do some radial quantization, then by standard physics arguments, the Hilbert space of the 4D theory on S3 is precisely the space of local operators of the 4D theory. And remember, I lose kind of nothing by doing this dimensional reduction. It's just they're immediately isomorphic to one another, it turns out. Whereas on the other hand, I could also do the dimensional reduction the other way and go to the 3D theory. And if I do this carefully and now keep all the Kaluza-Klein modes, which in particular is one of the reasons why I have an infinite tower of generators in my 2D chiral algebra, I can also relate this to the Hilbert space of the 3D theory on CP1, which is precisely the space of conformal blocks of the chiral algebra as I've just defined it. So either way, we have some Hilbert space at the locus where we're doing a radial quantization in the radial direction, either in the 3D picture or in the 4D picture, and I can establish an isomorphism between them. But in the 4D picture, the Hilbert space on S3 is the space of local operators. And if I go the other way, in the 3D picture, the Hilbert space of the 3D theory on CP1 is just the space of conformal blocks for the 2D chiral algebra. In fact, that's the 3D perspective is, I think, the most natural way, or at least one of the most natural ways to just define what the space of conformal blocks for a general chiral algebra is. So again, the twister space, the theory on twister space gives a 6D origin for both of these pictures. Okay. So that's kind of why local operators in 4D are associated to conformal blocks in 2D. And from there, the theorem follows by the table in the previous page. In particular, now I have all the ingredients to relate correlation functions in my big non-unitary 2D chiral algebra to form factors for the 4D theory, where again, the conformal blocks are associated to a choice of local operators that I want to insert. So let me just do now an example computation. And that'll, I think, pretty much land me on time. So here's kind of the simplest example of something I would want to compute. Let me choose as my operator in 4D, trace B squared. As I hinted at the beginning of the talk, this will be interesting also for making contact with QCD amplitudes, because trace B squared is what you would insert to deform you to full Yang-Mills theory if I integrated over the whole position of this operator insertion. And let me think of correlation functions in my 2D chiral algebra with this choice of conformal block associated to say two insertions of J tilde and an arbitrary number of insertions of J. So in 4D, these are two negative helicity gluons and an arbitrary number of positive helicity gluons. So physicists kind of should know this sort of structure as what's called an MHV amplitude. So what are the kind of the simple correlation functions that I can compute of this in this form? So I can get the answer for this with a simple induction argument. So first, let me start with just two J tildes, and I'll make the color indices or the gauge indices a little bit more explicit. Two J tildes and no J's. And I'm also using the notation J tilde Z is J tilde, the zero zeroth generator at Z. These are the only ones I need for this particular computation, it turns out. So if I start life with just two of them, I can actually completely fix the answer for this correlation function by symmetry. So I get something that's proportional to the killing form on the Lie algebra times Z1 minus Z2 squared. So first of all, there's two J tildes for two B squareds, precisely because this four-dimensional B field, which is Lagrange multiplier field in 4D, comes from what I called curly B in six dimensions. And curly B, the delta function localized on shell states of curly B, are precisely the things that are sourced by J tilde by the Kazul dual relations between these two things. Or in other words, B tilde is what's coupling to J tilde. So two Bs means two J tildes in this kind of very, very quick way of thinking about it. So this should be the first non-zero correlation function. I can actually completely fix the answer by symmetry. One can also do it by direct computation starting from six dimensions. But basically, you know, trace B squared is some SO4 invariant thing by Lorentz symmetry in four dimensions, which means it's in particular, it's SU2 invariant. SO4 is like SU2 plus SU2. And basically there's only one SU2 invariant bivector that you can build on CP1 cross CP1 that has the right behavior at infinity. And that fixes you to this answer for the basic correlation function. So this one just fixed by symmetry. The second most interesting case, base case, would be two J tildes, say A, B, C, and one J. So I can use the tree level OPEs that I wrote on the previous slide to basically take the OPE limit of this J with each of the two J tildes. So I use the tree level OPEs, two minus A three. So just bring me down to a sum of two terms, each of which depends on kind of the basic two-point function that I've already determined in step one. So J tilde, Z1, J tilde, Z2. Okay, so this just comes from the tree level OPE. And then I can just simplify C1 minus C2 cubed, C1 minus C3. Okay, just doing a bit of algebra, that's not particularly important. But I can get a simple closed form answer for this three-point function. And then once I have these two base cases, step one and step two, I can now kind of easily induct using the same types of arguments for an arbitrary number of insertions of J or arbitrary number of positive helicity gluons. So as many J's as I like, plus two J tildes. And for the physicists, if I kind of remember my spinner helicity notation and want to write this in a form that's more amenable to comparing to familiar amplitudes. So let me induct on N. Then I'll get a very familiar expression. Plus permutations. Okay, so this is the so-called Park-Taylor formula. It's the closed form tree level NMHV amplitudes for scattering two negative helicity gluons and an arbitrary number of positive helicity gluons. And we can see that we obtain it immediately from chiral algebra correlation functions in an extremely simple way from a two-dimensional chiral algebra calculation instead of doing anything difficult with four-dimensional scattering amplitudes at all. So you just land on this answer. So that's an extremely nice result for someone like me who actually is not normally inclined to compute scattering amplitudes. Okay, so I'm running out of time. So that's just one of the amplitudes that we can reproduce with this 2D chiral algebra. There's other kinds of amplitudes that we can reproduce from QCD. And those come about from choosing different conformal blocks associated to different non-trivial operator insertions in the four-dimensional theory. Everything I've shown you so far has been at tree level. One can also hope to push this program to the quantum level. Now, understanding the four-dimensional theory at the quantum level is going to be pretty challenging. We definitely don't fully understand it. It's a complicated conformal field theory that's self-dualing Mills plus this axion. But the two-dimensional chiral algebra, at least, is under good control. We understand the quantum deformation of it very well. It can be understood in a few different ways. But in particular, it should admit a rigorous construction via Kazul duality. Although, as I said, we kind of need to finish defining what that is for vertex algebra. We strongly suspect that that we can, and that enabled us to characterize the quantum deformation of this chiral algebra. And there's all kinds of fun things that we're doing now related to topological strings, amplitudes, self-dual gravity, and many other things, but I'm already out of time and my Apple Pencil is on its last leg. So let me just conclude and take any other questions that you may have.
Thanks very much, Natalie. Let me take questions from everyone online.
Special thanks to Natalie's Apple Pencil.
Don't know if you got
I'm
that.
I'm astonished it made it through the full hour.
Yeah, great. You did get that. Mary?
Yeah, there's a question.
The question I have is quite a rudimentary one. How should I think about this expression, which is a trace B squared with two J's in terms of the 4D theory? So I should think of it as two gluon insertions and the insertion of another local operator, which corresponds to integrating out, which corresponds to what you get when you integrate out B in the classical Lagrangian. Is that correct?
In four dimensions, it's a form factor. So trace B squared, trace B squared is really the insertion of trace B of the operator trace B squared in the 4D theory at the origin. And the two J, the J tildes say correspond to asymptotic states in four dimensions, to negative helicity gluon states in four dimensions. So like I said, you're computing scattering in the presence of an operator in four dimensions.
But B was originally an auxiliary field, right? In the 4D theory that you wrote down. It's like B times the self F plus or F minus, right? That's the action.
There's kind of some different annoying conventions for what physicists call self-dual gauge theory. In six dimensions, we had curly B. And curly B is the origin of B in four dimensions. Curly B has gauge symmetry in six dimensions. So even though the action of my 40 theory is BF, where B is an auxiliary field, because you know the gauge symmetry in six dimensions, I really have negative helicity states as well. I have both negative and positive helicity states in my 40 theory, just like I do for ordinary Yang-Mills. It's just they satisfy a BF type action and the Feynman rules you derive from that instead of the BF plus B squared type action.
See. And one follow-up question is, I believe there is a way on twisted space to add a further term such that you get the full Yang-Mills action, not just the self-dual part, but somehow for form factors, it seems like the BF action in 4D is sufficient. Is there a reason for that?
So the terms that you would add on twister space would be non-local. I'm really leveraging locality in the story to when I compute things in four dimensions. I don't know how to construct a chiral algebra with the 60 theory with non-local terms, even if it was a gauge anomalous.
Thank you very much.
I had just a quick clarification question. In your formulas that you showed, you said that you're just evaluating this correlation function for n equals m equals zero modes of the J's?
For this particular one.
I see. So if I try to compute arbitrary modes, what does that give me?
So for the MHV amplitudes, they would actually vanish. Basically because the higher modes like MN have spin M plus N at Z goes to infinity, which if you plug that in the twister space Lagrangian and kind of look at the poles from the volume form, that's not what you want to get MHV. But there are general, there are other form factors where the higher modes can give non-vanishing.
So by MHV, you just mean 2J tilde as an arbitrarily many J's, right?
Sorry, I couldn't quite hear you.
By MHV, you mean 2J tilde as an arbitrarily many J's?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Two negative helicity gluons and an arbitrary number of positive helicity gluons is the MHV amplitude.
Okay. Cool. Thanks.
We've also computed like NMHV, which is 3J tildes and arbitrary J's as well.
I see.
Mm-hmm. That's in the paper.
Great. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I don't know why my AirPods are so bad.
Have you thought about higher infinity-like operations in this chiral algebra, whether they might exist?
Yeah, no, not yet. You could totally do descent in the 3D theory and ask kind of by pull-push what that gives in 4D. That's something I would love to know the answer to. I haven't had a chance to think about it, but it should totally play some kind of role.
By the way, what's the?
I should also say with Nick, we have been playing with what do the magnetic monopoles in 3D correspond to in like 60 and 4D. Magnetic charge seem to just induce they give a spectral flow on the 2D chiral algebra, it turns out. But yeah, there's lots of other kind of fun questions, especially inspired by everything we know about these holomorphic logical 3D theories and all of the fun algebraic stuff that you and Kevin and Davide taught us. And Asan, you were saying something else?
Yeah, no, sorry. Sorry to interrupt. I was just going to ask, so you said there's a 3D description, but you didn't actually describe the theory. Could you say?
Yeah, I didn't. It's a little bit unwieldy. It is a 3D holomorphic topological theory that you would get from the twist of a 3D n equals 2 theory, which is a certain level zero Trin-Simons theory with some matter. But since I have to include all the KK modes from 60, there's like an infinite tower of field. So I just didn't want to write it down.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a level zero Trin-Simons theory with matter.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, it's also in the paper if you want to look at the gory
details. Yeah, I'll take a look.
When you mentioned monopoles, I guess that would be an extension. You would be looking at extensions of this very infinite chiral algebra. Is that?
Yeah, sorry. I'm going to just take my AirPods out so I can hear you all. One
second. So you mentioned—
Yeah, tutor, that's right.
Yeah, cool.
That's the hope, but we've had discussions about— Oh, he was asking if these celestial monopoles would be some sort of extension of this algebra. And that certainly seems to be the case, but you and I have had discussions about sort of non-abelian monopoles and how this should probably be done appropriately. But yeah, that's the idea.
Yeah, it's work in progress too, I should say.
Thanks very much. Let's all thank Natalie again.